Shallan needed to make the betrothal to Adelin Colin go forward. Not just for her family, but for the good of the world. Shallan would need the allies and resources that would give her. But what if she couldn't maintain the betrothal? What if she couldn't bring Brightness Navani to her side? She might need to proceed in finding Urithiru and preparing for the Voidbringers on her own. That terrified her, but she wanted to be ready. Heroes of presents Stormpod, a Stormlight Archive podcast. Book 2, Words of Radiance. This is just a quick spoiler warning for chapters 24 and 25 of Words of Radiance. If you haven't got caught up in all of your reading so far, if you're behind, or if you've skipped an episode and you just picked the wrong one, please make sure that you're not getting spoiled. We definitely don't want to surprise you and ruin anything for you. But if you're exactly where you're supposed to be, enjoy the episode. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sean Q, and he just got back from his horse riding lesson, and he said it was exhilarating. It's Jack. What's up?
Hello. What can I say? I like a wild Reishian between my thighs.
Did it try to buck you, or?
Yeah, maybe. It's funny. In terms of horseback riding, I've only been once in the Gatineaus.
Okay.
And it was a birthday present that my wife gave me, and I'd always wanted to try it, and I really enjoyed it. I had a blast. Like, I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I've done it twice. Yeah, it's great. It's great when you know what you're supposed to do. When you're like, when you're a 10-year-old kid and you go horseback riding for the first time?
I had no clue. What? This is a horse?
Oh, okay. Of course. yeah, I went twice. I've gone twice. The first time was grade 7, I think. It was a grade 7 trip. And we were all like in a line, like slowly like on our horses. And the horse in front of mine, I was at the very back of the line. That was the last horse. And the horse in front of mine bucked and kicked my horse in the face. And my horse took off. And I had to hold on for dear life. Not realizing that you're supposed to like kind of move with the horse. That's how you're supposed to ride a horse. You're supposed to move with the rocking of the horse. And I was just like, I just did the bounce. I did like the yoga bouncy ball on it.
So did that hurt?
It was nut crushing for sure.
Nut Bust. Was your horse's name Nut Buster?
It was NB for short. You get NB, kid. The second time I went was way more enjoyable. I was like 15 and I knew they told me this is how you're supposed to ride the horse. So once I started going, it was fucking incredible. Like, and the horse was really nice.
I just adored it. I wasn't quite expecting to love it so much.
Yeah.
Because it was just something that was just so far removed from my reality. I hadn't tried it my entire life up until sometime in my 30s.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So it was like just so wild to like, okay, yeah, I guess I'm going on a horse now.
That's cool.
So that's happening.
Well, hopefully the Kaladin enjoys his time as much as we enjoyed our times.
Well, we'll get to it, but yeah. I don't share his outlook on these creatures necessarily, which I think is just hilarious.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that. Let's start with Tin, chapter 24.
Doesn't he say something like, you're supposed to be a walking wagon or a walking cart or something like that?
Yeah. He refers to them as devils and, you know, like it's...
I picked the less evil-looking one.
We'll get to that. It's wild. I'm not sure if it's for comedy or if he's actually afraid of these things.
I think, you know, it's funny because I think we're supposed to be afraid of the Chulls because they're so different for us. But Chulls for them are the normal thing. Oh, horses for them are the thing that comes from a far-off land and it's like intimidating.
It's bizarre.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, it's just wild to get on top of these things. And, of course, well, anyways, we'll
get
cover
to
that for... Well, yeah, let's... let's cover it in a bit. But Tin, this chapter first 24. Chapter, we start off with another little stanza.
Mm-hmm.
Decay form destroys the souls of dreams. A form of gods to avoid, it seems. Seek not its touch, nor beckon its screams. Deny it. Watch where you walk, your toes to tread, or hill or rocky riverbed. Hold dear the fears that fill your head. Defy it.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, eh?
Yeah.
Decay form. Yeah, from the listener, the listener song of secrets,
mm-hmm.
27 stanza. What are your little thoughts on this? Decay form.
Yeah, destroys the souls of dreams really stood out to me. I don't know. Have you noticed that these are starting to get scarier and scarier?
Yeah.
Like they're not as nice and lively as scholar form or nimble form now. They're, you know, the last few have been kind of spooky.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know where they're heading in what direction they're heading, but decay form does not sound nice. It sounds like the listeners can become necromancers or something.
Yeah. Never trust a necromancer in your group. That's all
yeah.
I gotta say.
Yeah.
Chilblains. a form of gods to avoid, it seems. That's interesting to me, is that it's something to avoid.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, it's so, and then defy it at the end. Yeah,
it and
just
then
seems
defy
like
it, yeah.
It seems like a warning, as you know, these stanzas are supposed to be like instructions on how to, or they were at first, and now these sound like almost like warnings. Maybe the Song of Secrets is the warnings song, and the Song of Listing was the, you know, the here's how you get them list. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because lately they've all been Song of Secrets. You know, Night Form was Song of Secrets in the chapter before. I'm just kind of quickly flipping through here. Some on-the-spot research.
records and research.
Song of Winds was Storm Form. So, and Storm Form didn't sound super scary, but Night Form, Decay Form, yeah, these are a little spooky. They're a little spooky.
We are gearing up for Halloween, so it kind of fits.
We'll have to do our Halloween bonus episode soon.
Oh, yeah. Let's do that.
Let's do that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you see, says Gaz, most of us, we join the fight at the Shattered Plains for revenge, you know. Those marbles killed the king. It was going to be this grand thing and such, a fight for vengeance, a way to show the world that the Alethi don't stand for betrayal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Red agreed, this lanky, bearded soldier that was with him. So he's explaining this to Shallan, it turns out. And Red, this other man that's with Gaz, is saying, I remember it. The call to arms came to us from High Prince Vama himself, and it moved through the far coast like a bad stench. Every second man of age joined the cause. People wondered if you were a coward if you went to the pub for a drink, but didn't wear a recruit's patch. I joined up with five of my buddies. They're all dead now, rotting in those storm-cursed chasms.
Mm-hmm.
So this is talking about, like, you know, how everybody joined up.
Right.
To go to the Shattered Plains. And also, what I really like about this conversation is that it shows just how, like, everybody bought into it.
Right.
Like, hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah,
like,
it was a nice piece of propaganda was probably put out.
Yeah.
You know, like, everyone was, it sounds like people were being, maybe not shamed, but, like, sort of shamed if you weren't if you weren't joining up.
Yeah.
They weren't conscripted, so they weren't forced to, but there was a huge push to make people want to.
Right.
Yeah.
And also social pariah.
Yeah, all that stuff. Yeah, it's interesting to see that side of it, because we know that, you know, the assassination happens and then they make the vengeance pack and we're going to go to war. But this is neat to see how it affected regular people on, like, the lower, on the street level, you know?
So Shallan says to them, so you just got tired of fighting? So
such a naive point.
Yeah. So she's sitting at a desk now, and it says, well, a table. And again, I love this use of, like, well, is it a desk or is it a table?
Well, it's a table, but now it's her desk.
depends how you look at it, right?
Yeah.
Like, it functions as a desk.
Yeah.
It's a table, you know?
Yeah.
It just goes to that whole, you know, carriage versus...
For sure.
Versus slave wagon. So after 4 days of travel, they were approaching the section of the corridor where bandit strikes were a lot less likely, and they were getting close to the shattered planes. I thought that was a big tease when I was reading it. I'm like, we're getting close.
Yeah.
What's going to happen?
Yeah, yeah.
Tired of fighting, Gaz says. Oh, damnation, no. It wasn't us. It was the storming light eyes. No offense intended, Brightness, but storm them and storm them good. Red says, they stopped fighting to win. Mm-hmm. They started fighting for spheres. Every day, every storming day, we'd get up and fight on those plateaus, and we wouldn't make any progress. Who cared if we made progress? It was the gem hearts the High Princes were after.
Right.
And there we were, locked into virtual slavery by our military oaths. No right to travel, as good citizens should have, since we'd enlisted. We were dying, bleeding, and suffering so they could get rich. That was all. So we left. A bunch of us who drank together, though we served different High Princes, we left them and their war behind.
Yeah.
Pretty cool, eh?
Yeah, it's really cool.
It's neat to hear that from Gaz, because when you get to know Gaz at the beginning, I mean...
He's the asshole that everyone hates.
He's such an asshole.
He's literally the face of the torment that the Bridgemen are going through, right? He's the only person we see day to day. We get a couple of higher ups, some of these light eyes, you know, with the Lamoral and then the lady, whatever her name is, after Lamoral's dead. But Gaz is really the face of that when we get there. And it's nice to know that he, you know, he's like, fuck this. I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, his companion, so Red says, now, Gaz, that isn't everything. Be honest with the lady. Didn't you owe some spheres to the debt mongers, too?
Yeah.
What was that you told us about being one step from being turned into a Bridgeman? Here now, Gaz says, that was my old life. Ain't nothing in that old life matters anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Besides, Brightness Shallan said our debts would be taken care of. Everything will be forgiven, Shallan said. See? Except your breath, she adds.
Yeah.
And then they all start laughing. Yeah.
I want to go back a second here and just point out a little something here. Mm-hmm. When Gaz first starts explaining what's happening, Shallan remarks, she's like, occasionally he would glance to the side, a kind of nervous tick.
Tick, yeah.
And this is, we know this from the first book, this is that thing that happens to Gaz because he's got one eye and he doesn't trust that there's not something spooky in that side of his vision.
In that side.
So he constantly has to compensate with the other eye and look over in that direction.
Yeah.
So it's a minor detail that I'm really, really glad that that Sanderson kept from that character building that he did when he first wrote Way of Kings, and he kept it in there. It's just a tiny little line, but I really appreciate that.
It's also interesting to have a character that, you know, literally checks his blind spot.
Right. Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm. There's a metaphor there for sure.
I think so.
Yeah, I like it. It's really cool.
So I just thought this was a real treat getting this perspective from Gaz.
Mm-hmm.
So everything will be taken care of except your breath. But this is interesting too. On their travels over to the Shattered Plains, there hadn't been a single problem with discipline in the days they'd been together, and they were quick, even eager to be in service to her.
Mm-hmm.
So they quickly sort of, you know, fell in line too.
Right.
Once. Like, now that they're serving another light eyes.
Well, there's a big promise here, right? There's a big promise that she's said.
Yeah,
like,
big promise.
You're going to help you forgive all debts, anything that was wrong. You're going to be absolved of anything that you did wrong. You just have to follow me. And they've completely bought into it. Like, she's got her way, man. She's very convincing.
Turns out Gaz is also talented in the area of carpentry.
Yeah,
as he is affixing her a latch with hinges and a small window, and it says here he gestured with a smile at his new window.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not as nice enough to befit a light-eyed lady, but at least you'll be able to see now.
He's definitely
proud.
That was
my alternate title.
Oh,
that's my alternate title for this. New window.
Hmm. Yeah.
Because Tin also provides that too. Right. She's the new window.
We get a new window opened up into Gaz's character. We get to see him in a new light.
Right.
Yeah, we've opened the shutters on his character. Yeah, good job. I like new window. That's really great.
New window was my alternate title for this chapter. I mean, this chapter is Tin, mm-hmm. but Tin is Tin at the end of the chapter, as we know, she's, you know, wanting in on this.
Right. But let's wait to get there. But yeah. she's, okay. It's funny because she has the right read on things, but also the complete wrong read on things. You know what I mean?
Totally.
She thinks she's outsmarted Shallan. Okay. Hold on. Let's save that for later because it's.
That is so cool.
It's great.
I love how it ends. Okay. So eager to serve her presents the window and then Red is looking at his work and saying, not bad. Why didn't you tell us you trained as a carpenter? I haven't trained as one, Gaz said, but I spent some time around a lumber yard.
Yeah.
Right? Which brought me back to our little, yeah. right? The lumber yeah. yard,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. The two carpenters.
I was digging that mention,
Gaz, maybe in our headcanon side stories here, this like, you know, our fan stories that we're going to write on the side, maybe Gaz ended up hanging out with the two carpenters and they taught him a few things. That's why he was able to do this.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
You pick up a few things, he says. It's very nice, Gaz, Shallan says. I appreciate it deeply. It's nothing. You should probably have one on the other side, too. I'll see if I can scrounge another hinge off of one of the merchants.
Mm-hmm.
Already kissing the feet of our new master, Gaz.
Yeah, I don't like this at all here.
Says Vatha. So Vatha comes in. The only thing I don't like about Vatha showing up, who used to be the leader of these bandits, if you will, mm-hmm. of these deserters, yeah, is that it says here in the text, Shallan hadn't noticed him approaching.
Right. So he's a little sneaky.
So stealth check. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, a little bit sneaky. And also, you know, is he... I guess he is in her blind spot.
Right. He can cast Pass Without a Trace. That's why. He's got the plus
pass
10.
Without...
He's got plus 10 on his stealth.
So I'm not saying that Vath is a problem. I'm just saying he could be.
Right.
He could be a problem. And if he turns out to be, this little line here in the writing mm-hmm. is very well placed.
Okay. I just want to also compare him to another character who didn't necessarily buy in right away to what someone was selling. All these men have all bought into Shallan, right? Except for Vatha seems to be like keeping his distance, not buying in right away. And in the first book, Moash didn't buy in right away to what Cal was selling either. And now he's his like closest confidant. No. So I just want to like say that, you know, we have a history of characters not necessarily buying bullshit. And not that Cal's stuff is bullshit, but you know what I mean? So it's there's definitely some comparisons here. Some parallels.
Totally. So he's actually enjoying a small bowl of steaming curry.
Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting.
And she thinks, she'd like to sneak a bite of that because she's supposed to eat sweet things.
But the caravan had proper women's food.
Right, right.
Which I was kind of reminded, I can't remember in the text if we've had anything that alluded to.
We did.
You know.
We did when Yasna and Shallan and the Taravangian sat down to eat a meal together in Carbranth.
Right.
The ladies had like a sweet soup or something. It was like
it was
the shittiest description of a meal ever. It was a sweet soup or something. The women are supposed to eat something sweet and men are supposed to eat something spicy.
Yeah.
It's kind of.
Can I have some brown sugar on my vegetables, please?
I would love that.
Vegetable soup.
That sounds amazing.
On brown like some, sugar on vegetable soup?
Not on vegetable soup, but like maybe on like a on like a butternut squash or like a sweet potato.
I think you'd, okay. All right.
So yeah, Vatha's going after Gaz here. You know, he's like kind of cutting him down. Gaz has literally done something nice, feels really proud about it, and then Vatha comes along and makes him feel like shit. You seem happy to have been made a servant to the Light Eyes again, he says. It's a wonder your shirt isn't torn up from all the crawling and scraping you've been doing. Like, get out of here, Vatha. Like,
yeah. Well, Shallan says, so far as I know, Vatha, you didn't have a wagon. So what is it you'd have want Gaz to make a window in? Your head, perhaps? I'm certain we can arrange that. Did he tell you about the money he owes? Vatha says to Shallan. We will handle that problem when the time comes. This lot is going to be more trouble than you think, little Light Eyes. Going right back to where they were before.
Yeah, he's not. This time he doesn't believe them. Right? He doesn't believe her.
He doesn't believe her. And he, yeah, and but, he's. I also like the way that he calls her Little Light Eyes.
Yeah,
I almost find that's a good title for a song in Roshar.
Oh,
Little Light Eyes,
like a rock band, like their ballad or something. Little Light Eyes,
totally. Little Light Eyes.
Yeah, maybe. Good. Yeah, it makes me think a little bit of Bridge Boy. Kind of debasing the person that it's towards, you know, Little Light Eyes. She's the lady here, and he's debasing her by saying little, calling her little. I don't know, you know.
Instead of the Pet Shop Boys, we got the Bridgeman Boys.
The Bridgeman Boys, yeah.
Bridgeman Boys. Going right back to where they were before. So yeah, so he's not really taken by Shallan's shtick at all. He's just not taken in on this at all. If it wasn't for Gaz and the others' enthusiasm in kind of adhering to what Shallan was selling, then Vatha would probably not be having this problem right now. He'd probably still have his deserters intact. He'd have power, influence. But for now, he does not.
Right.
This time, there'll be heroes for rescuing me. And he snorts, this lot will never be heroes. They're creme brightness, pure and simple.
I feel like he's saying this because he thinks of himself as creme. Like, these men are like me. We're all pieces of shit. And you can't turn these men, and you can't turn me into something that we're not. And so I think that this, he's deflecting a little bit. All this stuff he's putting on Gaz and the rest of these guys is how he feels about himself, I think. Not to psychoanalyze every moment of the book, but I feel like that's probably what it is.
You're trying very hard to beat them down, Vatha, Shallan says. Are you that afraid of being wrong? One would assume you'd be accustomed to it by now. He grunts and he says, be careful, girl. You wouldn't want to accidentally insult a man. The last thing I'd want to do is accidentally insult you, Vatha said.
Vatha.
Shallan says, to think I couldn't manage it on purpose if I wanted. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, that's such a great response.
Yeah.
That's just amazing. And then he's trying to respond, but he can't get the words out. So she says, I'm not surprised you're at a loss for words, as it's also an experience I'm sure you're accustomed to. You must feel it every time someone asks you a challenging question, such as the color of your shirt. He says, cute. But words aren't going to change these men or the troubles they're in. Oh, on the contrary, Shallan says, in my experience, words are where most change begins. I have promised them a second chance, and I will keep my promise.
In my experience, words are where most change begins.
Right.
Where does it begin? It begins with the first ideal. And the first ideal are words. Life before death, right?
Yes.
Strength before weakness.
Right.
Journey before destination. Yeah. I like this. In her experience, words are where most change begins. And that's when you first go along this track of discovering these things about, you know, when people go Kaladin and now Shallan. We already know that Shallan has already said the first ideal. Pattern told her, you've already said it. And then remember, she started having a memory of it and then pushed that memory away. So it's great because this is exactly how you become a radiant, and I'm going to put that in quotes because we don't know whether or not these characters really ever become radiants. They're just exhibiting something.
I just immediately when I read this, I just thought about the title of the book,
Words of Radiance.
I just thought about the Words of Radiance, and it was just so cool with her saying that you know things that affect the most change, you know, begin with words in her experience.
Yeah.
So he's insulting the words and dismissing the words, and then she says to him, "I think it's her." She says, "Hang on, no." Vatha grunts,
and then he walks away.
And then she says, "That one always walks around acting like a chasm fiend ate his mother, or perhaps the chasm fiend was his mother."
Yeah.
Love it. Red starts laughing and says, "If you don't mind me saying, Brightness, you have quite the clever tongue on you." Never actually had someone's tongue on me, clever or not. I'd hazard to consider it an unpleasant experience. It ain't so bad, Gaz says. And then they look at him.
They're like, what?
He's like, just saying, it ain't. And they're still looking at him. And they start laughing. And then Gaz is like, I'm going to go get some food. I'll help you hunt down that hinge afterward.
Yeah, this is classic Shallan here, like using her tongue, you know, quick wit with the quips and stuff and like the quick insults. This is like, you know, back in
classic
the first
Shallan.
This is classic.
Yeah. So that was really cool. So again, Gaz, so Gad goes to get the...
Red leaves and Gaz stays and he's sanding the floor to Shallan's wagon. She decides to do some more work. And one of the things that she's been working on at this desk table thing is she was looking through Yasna's notes and then she starts to write a letter to her brothers.
Trying to devise ways to help her brothers, which include trying to buy a soul caster owned by the Alethi King.
Right.
Or trying to track down the ghost bloods and somehow deflect their attention.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I guess I said that she was writing a letter, and she's not really writing a letter. She's just coming up with
ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Shallan needed to make the betrothal to Adeline Colan go forward, not just for her family, but for the good of the world.
Right.
Shallan would need the allies and resources that would give her, but what if she couldn't maintain the betrothal? What if she couldn't bring Brightness Navani to her side? She might need to proceed in finding Irithiru and preparing for the Voidbringers on her own. And that terrified her. But she wanted to be ready.
Yeah. This is a valid concern here because she, you know, when Yasna was with her, Yasna's the one who set it up. She shows up to the Shattered Plains with Yasna and Yasna's like, listen, she's a perfect girl for Adeline. Let's do this. And then now she's going to show up by herself if she gets there. She's going to be like... Hi, remember me? I was the girl that Yasna spoke for. By the way, she's dead.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what to tell you. I can't really prove to you I'm her. You know what I mean? Like, there's all this stuff, right?
Yeah. Do you have any jam in bread?
Yeah. Make sure you put the jam on it because you don't want to eat that bread by itself.
So she digs out a different book. Mm-hmm. Which listed all the current Alethi High Princes and discussed their political maneuvers and goals.
Yeah.
She had to know the political landscape of the Alethi court and who among them might be potential allies if all else failed. And then the next line, dude, this got me worried.
What?
It says, what of this Sadius? Shallan thought, flipping through the pages. Both he and his wife were sharp of wit. A man of that kind of intelligence might listen to Shallan's arguments and understand them. And I'm like, oh, no. I'm like, Shallan, no.
Right. No, don't
go down this road. Don't do it. It's already getting confusing with, you know, we've got Adeline who's, you know, at odds with Kaladin. We've already got, like, at odds things. And now, like...
She shows up and makes an alliance with Sadius. Like,
can you imagine?
No. Yeah.
Like, honestly, like, it makes my head spin, but... That could be exactly what Mr. Sanderson has in mind, which is amazing.
Yeah,
it's
also amazing, yeah.
So when I was reading that, I'm like, no, but at the same time, I'm like, yes, but no.
This book that she's reading, this collection of notes that Yasna wrote, are old notes. So in them doesn't reflect any recent history, right? So like,
no, of course
Yasna
not. She
wouldn't
doesn't
have
any idea.
Yeah, she wouldn't have been able to tell anything about the tower or anything like that.
Yeah, she hasn't even, like, had a conversation with Galinar or Kaladin or any of them, like, you know, to get filled in. So,
yeah. I do like this this section because it's really neat that Yasna took the time to actually write a bunch of lists, a list of all the high princes and, like, who can be trusted, who can't, what are they all about. I really like that.
Well,
we have a little bit of stuff here. Let me go through it here, and if there's anything specific you want to, like, quote, just let me know, okay? So she does say that Sadius is dangerous and conniving. And Aladar, Yasna describes him as brilliant. And it's funny because we just had a scene, this book, with Dalinar and Aladar, where... Aladar didn't necessarily see how the fight was going, and with Dalinar's help, it like kind of they veered the fight into their favor. So Aladar's brilliant, which means that Dalinar is even more so tactically, right? Because he sees things that Aladar doesn't. But he's known for his political maneuvers, right? He's fond of games of chance. That's one of the things they say. He loves like games of chance, yeah, so gambling and stuff.
Yeah.
And she thinks to herself that maybe he could be convinced to strike out and look for Irithiru because he would be taking a chance on the riches that might come from finding it, right? So she's like, okay, he might be someone to be able to look into, which is really cool.
Because he's a gambler, I might be able to use that to my advantage.
Right. So this is the exact reason why she's reading this book is for these little tidbits, right?
Totally, 100%.
Hatham says that he's he has
a man of delicate politics,
and careful planning. So that's, you know, he's more of like kind of like a spider kind of weaving a little bit of a web, like being very, very meticulous about things. And then it says kind of the Thanadol, Bethab, and Sibiriel. The Thanadol,
Bethab. Didn't think much of these.
Yeah. And Sibiriel, she doesn't think much of these guys, which doesn't really give Shallan too much to go on, I guess, but.
Right. So Thanadol, and she says the first one she called oily.
Yeah.
The second one she called a dullard, and the third one she called outrageously rude.
Right. Right.
So
we have to assume
funny.
A little bit that this list and this book that has all this information in it probably has more information than what Shallan has kind of thought about and told us. Because I mean, they're not gonna just transcribe the book that she's reading into the book that we're reading. But this is just a kind of an overview of what she's found out.
Gaz comes back in the picture here and says, or rather, she calls to him and says,
"Yeah, because he's done. He's done, and then he's gonna leave. He's done the sanding the floor, and he's gonna leave." And she's like, "Oh, a moment, Gaz."
And she says, "A moment, Master Gaz." And he says, "I'm no master." Mm-hmm. Six non-only brightness, never could buy myself anything better. How bad exactly are these debts of yours? Well, one of the fellows I owed was executed, but there's more. 80 ruby bromes, brightness. Though they might not take them anymore, it's my head they may want these days. Quite a debt for a man such as yourself. Are you a gambler? Ain't no difference, he said. Sure. And that's a lie, Shallan says, cocking her head. I would know the truth from you, Gaz. Just turn me over to them, he says, and walks toward the soup.
Yeah.
Ain't no matter. I'd rather that than be out here wondering when they'll come and find me anyhow.
So he's like kind of committed to either redemption or execution or whatever. Like he's just committed now. Yeah. He's like, I'm tired of living the lies. I'm tired of like wandering and waiting. You know, he's probably, remember, he didn't have a cushy spot on those shattered plains either. He was in essence, they said earlier that he was like, you know, very close to being a bridgeman. You know, there's a line.
He was very close, but I think that almost had something to do with Kaladin, right? Like,
right.
They suggested toward the end of the Way of Kings that the attention was now going from Kaladin to Gaz,
right?
In terms of like,
and he would have been punished and put it into the bridge cruise as well,
right?
I kind of like thinking about that because that could mean that if that had happened and Gaz had been put into Bridge 4. Then Gaz might have been part of this new glorious Bridge 4, you know what I mean?
Right.
And not out here in the desert, in the Frostlands with the Shallan. It's like this whole, had Bridge 4 escaped and actually become deserters, the other reverse is, had Gaz joined Bridge 4 earlier because of a punishment, he might have been, you know, surrounded by Glory Spren at the end when he had done something great, right? So it's really fun to think about.
They may have put him in another bridge crew.
Mm-hmm. That's true, too.
In which case, we may never have heard from him again.
Yeah, that's true.
She lets him go, and she goes back to her studies. And she's reading, and she's thinking that Irithiru is not on the Shattered Plains.
Right.
But how is Yasna certain of that? The plains were never fully explored because of the chasms. Who knows what's out there? But it says here, Yasna was very complete in her notes.
Yeah.
It appeared that most of the old records spoke of Urithiru as being in the mountains. The shattered plains filled a basin.
Mm-hmm.
And it says in the notes that Noadon could walk there. Flipping to a quote of the Way of Kings, Yasna questioned the validity of that statement, though Yasna questioned pretty much everything, as do I.
Right. I do like this part here because you had mentioned before that you thought that Shallan was blindly too much taking Yasna's word for everything and not doing her own research about the Voidbringers and about other things. And this is one of those moments when she's kind of questioning that because, you know, Yasna's saying Urithiru is not on the Shattered Plains. And she's like, you know,
how could she know that?
Yeah, how is she certain of that? So I do like this, that this is pointing in the way that she is still using that critical thinking that Yasna taught her, even about Yasna's notes herself, right? So
yeah, let's keep it up because I don't want her to necessarily apply it unnecessarily to the listeners.
Right, of course.
Okay, so Pattern says, "Are you well?" He liked to come out when it was darker. Shallan says, "Historians are a bunch of liars." And he's like, sounding satisfied.
Yeah.
Why is it that he likes liars?
They're Lysbren.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, they're Lysbren. They like lies.
I have to remind myself.
They like lies, but they also like truths, right?
Do they equate lies with stories?
Maybe.
Like, are stories considered lies?
Yeah,
I would think so. Okay.
I would think so. If you're trying to convince someone that something is real by telling them a fantastical story, and that person almost believes that it could be real, it's, you know, that's a great lie.
That's a lie, yeah. Interesting. A bunch of liars. That wasn't a compliment, she says. Yeah. And he goes, "Oh, I love that. That's awesome."
Yeah.
Shallan slams the book closed and says, "These women were supposed to be scholars. Instead of recording facts, they wrote opinions and presented them as truth. They seem to take great pains to contradict one another, and they dance around topics of import like Spren around a fire, never providing heat themselves, just making a show of it." And Pattern says, "Truth is individual." What? No, it's not. It's truth. It's reality. Pattern's like, "Your truth is what you see. What else could it be? That is the truth that you spoke to me. The truth that brings power." She looks at him. Pattern starts to buzz. Like in the middle of a storm, a strange, angry sound. And after that, he'd ranted in a language that she didn't understand. Panicking Gaz and the other soldiers she'd invited into the shelter. This is interesting, eh? This behavior from Pattern?
Mm-hmm. Before we get into this a little bit more here with the table and the state of reality, I just want to point out that this part is very apropos for right now, because she says these scholars, instead of recording facts, they wrote opinions.
Opinions, yeah.
And we don't like to talk too much politics on this show or a state of the world. We really like to keep it to the book. But I find it very apropos to what's going on in the world right now, you know? Facts versus opinions, and like truth is individual or is it actual reality? You know what I mean? There's, you know, people are finding their own truths outside of potential reality.
Right.
So it's, there's just so much to see here that is like, that's kind of in, like, it talks a little bit about what we're dealing with right now in the, you know, 2021 thing. So I just wanted, I thought I'd point it out.
No, I think you're totally right. And I like that Shallan and Yasna both, I don't think we're that interested in their own truth.
Right.
Like, I'm not so sure that they had already decided on a narrative and then were going out to explore things and would only accept things that supported
their narrative. Right.
Like, they're almost not interested in the narrative.
Right.
They're interested in the pursuit of truth.
Right.
And they consider it to be an absolute or some kind of objective reality that can be observed by multiple intelligences, let's say.
Right.
But what Pattern is saying here is, like, he's like, well, no, it's the individual.
Right.
Which is really curious.
It's very curious, yeah. Their approach is definitely a Aristotelian approach, right? Like, this scholar wrote this about this moment in history. Let's go back and re-examine history to make sure that the things that we know about history are right.
Yeah.
Right? So.
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And so during the high storms, he's been starting to buzz, which was kind of panicking the others, but.
Yeah.
But she's kind of got away with it.
Yeah.
And she says, Pattern, she snaps at this, and she says, this table has four legs. Would you not say that is a truth, independent of my perspective? And he's like, he's kind of uncertain. He says, what is a leg? only as it is defined by you. Without a perspective, there is no such thing as a leg on a table, or a table, there's only wood. You've told me the table perceives itself this way, because people have considered it long enough as being a table. It becomes truth to the table because of the truth that people create for it.
And she's like, interesting.
Yeah.
Now,
she wasn't so interested in the nature of truth at the moment, yeah, but in how Pattern perceived it.
Mm-hmm.
It's, is this because he's from the cognitive realm? The books say that the spiritual realm is a place of pure truth, while the cognitive is more fluid.
It makes sense,
choice of
right?
Words, they're fluid, like the fluidity of truth.
Right. It makes a lot of sense because, like, in our world, a table is a table, right? But in this world, there is a realm where this table has sort of sentience. Like, she, remember, she talked to a stick turn it into fire, and it said, I am a stick. So...
Yes, I am. Yeah,
right?
I am
so,
stick,
like,
yeah.
I am stick is, like, the philosophical saying for all this stuff. Because the table doesn't see itself as a table. It does because we see it as a table, and we force that identity on the table over... You know, how many ever years of it we're using it as a table. This is a table. Come
but
and sit
again,
at the table.
See, again, but see, again, like this leans to the multiplicity of truth. You know, it's a table, but it's also a desk. It's also wood.
It's perspective.
So it,
it comes down to perspective.
So he's kind of right about all this and about the fluidity of, it's kind of like, it's kind of like saying, let's say, in the Platonic forms of Plato. Like there's an ideal form of everything. Let's say,
mm-hmm.
but there's no such thing as one chair.
Right.
There's like 100 billion different varieties of chairs, but yet they're all chairs.
Right.
So I don't know.
It's interesting.
This is a really. I think it's a really interesting conversation that they appear to be on different sides of this.
But this has to do, like I said, this has to do with our theme for this book so far, which is perspective, right?
Perspective, yeah. Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Spren Shallan says, if people weren't here, would Spren have thought? Not here in this realm, Pattern says. I do not know about the other realm. You don't sound concerned, Shallan says. Your entire existence might be dependent on people. It is, Pattern says. But children are dependent upon parents. Besides, there are others who think. Shallan says, Voidbringers? Yes. I do not think that my kind would live in a world with only them. They have their own Spren. Shallan sits up sharply.
Yeah.
As did I when I read this.
You're like, what?
Their own Spren? Pattern shrank on her table, scrunching up, his ridges growing less distinct. Well, Shallan asks. Well, we do not speak of this. Well, you might want to start, Shallan says. It's important. Pattern begins to buzz. And he says, in a very quiet voice, small voice, Spren are power, shattered power. Power given thought by the perceptions of men. Honor, cultivation, and another. Fragments broken off. Another? Shallan asks. Odium. He spoke the word as if needing to force it out.
Like everything in his being doesn't want to say this word.
Doesn't want to say this word.
Yeah. It's so awesome.
And he says, Shallan writes it down furiously. Odium. Hatred. A type of Spren? Perhaps a large, unique one, like Cusachesh from Eerie or the Night Watcher. Hatred Spren. She'd never heard of such a thing.
Do you remember Cusachesh from Axes the Collector?
Yeah.
Right.
That was my first big, like, oh my gosh, I loved Spren even more because you just kept getting all these reveals of Spren, right? Including, oh, we have cities now. Oh, we have Spren that are for the Voidbringers. Like, just adding so much more complexity to them. It's just, it's fantastic.
Right.
So as she's writing this down, she's never heard of such a thing. One of her slaves comes in and says, Brightness, yes, Suna. I am, the other lady, she asked me to tell you, he was pointing towards the tent used by Tin, tall woman who is the leader of the few remaining caravan guards. Mm-hmm. She wants me to visit her, Shallan asks. Yes, for food, I guess. Well, thank you, Suna. And then there's a little bit of world building here on these slaves that they have. Mm-hmm. They have tattoos on their foreheads rather than brands. It was the kinder way to do it, and usually marked a person who entered the servitude willingly, mm-hmm. as opposed to by capture or committing a crime or something.
Yeah,
I thought that was an interesting distinction.
Yeah, it's cool.
Especially since Kaladin is branded.
Right, and can't right? be tattooed.
And it makes it look like you willingly went into servitude.
Right. Well, tattoos are willingly. Brands are right. By force. And so he was forced into it and cannot right. cover it up with a tattoo.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Yeah. It's so cool.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. So she's going to go see Tin. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to unpack this next bit here.
Go
ahead. I've got a thought about her dancing around the truth, which is coming up here.
Yeah, there's a little part here where she says that she doesn't keep the spheres in her trunk anymore, and she actually leaves the trunk open for everyone to see right. that there's nothing to steal.
There's just books.
Right. right. So that no one's tempted to try to do anything, right?
Right.
It's a little bit of the mind fuckery that she's playing with them, but, I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's very smart, too.
You dance around the truth too, she thought to herself as she walked away from the fire. Just like those historians you were ranting about. She pretended these men were heroes, but had no illusions about how quickly they could change coats in the wrong circumstances. Mm-hmm. It's true. Like, she speaks about truth, and yet she's the one who is, you know, making things up, making right. stories, mm-hmm. lies.
Right.
Right?
Lies.
So, Shut it's on. Interesting. Tin's tent was large and well lit. I like how it's described here that she was a woman who wore a sword. I like the choice here, wore a sword. Like, I'm not so sure if we describe, you know, male warriors, like, as, you know, wearing a sword, like you wore your sword.
Yeah.
I find it interesting that she's the woman who wore a sword, almost like how you would wear a dress.
Right.
Yeah. Or wear something that, you know what I mean? I just think
like it's an accessory or something.
Yeah. Like it was different when I read it. I read just the way I read that one line. I thought, oh yeah, the woman who wore a sword.
Yeah. I don't know if I've ever referred, like in D&D, I don't know if I've ever referred to my character yeah. wearing his sword.
Well, see, that's what I was wondering as well. I'm like, well, how do I word it?
You might start saying that. You might start describing characters
by saying.
It's kind of poetic. It's kind of nice.
I just like that line, a woman who wore a sword. Mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting.
Like it's not apart from her, right?
Well, just that what I took from it was that kind of like, who's the character in Game of Thrones that was the, you know, the like female lead?
Brienne of Tarth?
Is it Brienne?
Yeah, Brienne of Tarth.
Brienne of Tarth, yeah. So she...
Our girl, Gwendolyn Christie?
Gwendolyn, yeah.
Yeah,
so
she's awesome.
She was feminine, but also carried a sword. She didn't have to be feminine in many traditional no. sort of ways or mm-hmm. ways that the world has become accustomed to, which was really interesting. And I kind of liken those things to this character a little bit, mm-hmm. that she is different.
Yeah.
But still a woman
yeah.
and maybe still carrying a certain element of femininity mm-hmm. with her.
For the record, I think Brienne of Tarth is sexy as fuck.
Oh, dude.
That shit's the best, awesome. Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That character, I got it. Well, we could do it.
Yeah, that's a whole other show, yeah.
It's a whole other bang. Bringing her up is bittersweet. I should say that. The parchment hurried out, and Shallan watched them suspiciously. Mm-hmm. So just a little bit there that she's watching them suspiciously. That's the part of Shallan's whole thing I'm not wild about right now. Mm-hmm. So Tin asks, I asked your men, and they said that you hadn't dined. I had the parchment bring enough food for two. Thank you, Shallan says. She's looking at her and thinking, among these people, she wasn't a timid girl, but a powerful woman. Well, theoretically.
Right.
I like that she said theoretically.
Yeah, because she doesn't know yet.
Just doesn't know.
Mm-hmm.
I've ordered my people to keep the perimeter clear, Tin says. We can speak freely.
I like that, too.
That as well. Yeah, it means, Tin says, that you can tell me who you really are.
Yeah.
What did she mean by that? Well, I'm Shallan Devar, as I've said. Yes, Tin says, walking over and motioning for her to sit down. Please. Shallan sits herself down carefully, using a ladylike posture with legs bent to the side. But when Tin sat down, she sat down cross-legged, flipping her coat out behind her. She dug right into her meal, dipping flatbread into curry that seemed too dark and smelled too peppery to be feminine. Men's food? Shallan asks. I've always hated those definitions, Tin says. I was raised in Tubela by parents who worked as interpreters. I didn't realize certain foods were supposed to be for women or men until I visited my parents' homeland for the first time. It seems stupid to me. I'll eat what I want, thank you very much.
It does seem stupid.
Isn't it great?
Yeah.
It's totally stupid. Yeah. But I like this character. Like I eat what I want, I'm wearing a sword, I'm doing what I want.
Yeah.
Like that's it.
Yeah, it's
period.
Cool.
Yeah, it's great.
And Shallan was just saying, maybe I'll be able to sneak some curry or something, you know, at some point. And she could if she wanted to now. She has the opportunity.
Right. But Tin drops a big bomb here and says, I have a span reed.
Right.
And Shallan looks up like, oh.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's connected to one over in Tashik at one of their new information houses. You hire someone, an intermediary there. And they can perform services for you, research, make inquiries, even relay messages for you via span read to any major city in the world. It's quite spectacular. This sounds so much like they're discussing like having like a smartphone.
Yeah.
Or like you the know, internet access.
Yeah. Yeah. I have it in the info dump
you
later.
You gotta try
but
this. Yeah. Like it's really, really cool. And Shallan's like, this sounds useful. Indeed, you can find out all kinds of things. For example, I had my contact find out they could what they could on House Devar.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh boy.
Here we go.
She's already digging into it, right?
Yeah.
It's apparently a small, out-of-the-way house with large debts and an erratic house leader who may or may not still be alive. He has a daughter, Shallan, whom nobody seems to have met. Well, I am that daughter, Shallan says, so I'd say that nobody is a stretch. And why would an unknown scion of a minor Vedan family be traveling the Frostlands with a group of slavers, all the while claiming that she's expected in the Shattered Plains and that her rescue will be celebrated, that she has powerful connections enough to pay the salaries of a full mercenary troop? Truth is sometimes more surprising than a lie. Tin smiles and says, it's all right. You don't need to keep up the front with me.
Right.
You're actually doing a good job here. I've discarded my annoyance with you and have decided to be impressed instead. You're new to this, but talented. This? The art of the con, of course. The great act of pretending to be someone you aren't, then running off with the goods. I like what you pulled with those deserters. It was a big gamble and it paid off. But now you're in a predicament. You're pretending to be someone several steps above your station and you're promising a grand payoff. I've run that scam before, and the trickiest part is the end. If you don't handle this well, these heroes you've recruited will have no qualms stringing you up by the neck. I've noticed that you're dragging your feet, moving us toward the plains. You're uncertain, aren't you? You're in over your head.
And
interesting, eh?
I just love all this. Because she's pegged
so
her.
Good.
We said earlier, Tin has pegged her, but not exactly right.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Because she thinks Shallan. I think Shallan thinks that in some ways she probably can pull this off, like the forgiveness of the dead.
Well, when she says, you know she's like, you're uncertain, are you? In over your head. And Shallan says, most definitely. And
right.
That's the truth. She is in over her head.
Right.
But Tin thinks that she's trying to pull a fast one on somebody.
Right.
And Shallan is sort of pulling a fast one on everyone, but altruistically, not for benefit. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
She's literally doing the same skills that Tin is saying she's doing, but for a different purpose than Tin thinks she's doing it for. And the part of this, the layer, the level of awesomeness on this for me is that Shallan is like, oh, you think I'm a con artist.
I'm a con artist, yeah.
Then, okay then, I'm a con artist.
I'll be a con artist.
Right.
Yeah, I know.
It's
I
so
know.
Great.
That's the coolest. Yeah, it almost goes to, like, from her perspective, like from Tin's perspective, I label you a table.
Right.
So
matter
you're a table.
Of fucking perspective, bro.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're a con artist? Oh, yes, I am a con artist.
Yeah, and check
even
me
though,
out.
Even though I'm a stick.
Right, right.
Right.
She's willing to burn,
so
right?
Cool.
She's willing to burn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so cool. So, and then she says, well, Tin says, I'm here to help. Yeah, but at what cost, Shallan says. I want in on whatever you're planning. And then she stabs her bread down in the bowl like a sword into a great shell.
Mm-hmm.
I like that, including that in there, because it's like, oh, we have a fighter. She's
yeah.
useful.
She's like a predator, right? She's like,
put a fighter in the party. Mm-hmm. Like, I've got a fighter here.
Yeah, yeah.
This is good, right? You came all the way here in the Frostlands for something. Your plot is likely no small con, but I can't help but assume you don't have the experience to pull it off. Shallan taps her fingers on the table.
This is the best line here. Who would she be for this woman?
Who
did
she
need to be?
Mm-hmm.
This is amazing, dude. This is that. Remember, we talked in the first book about Shallan being able to make quick decisions and then just kind of rolling with the punches and being adept at it. Here's another moment like that. Who do I need to be for this woman?
Quick on her feet. Who do I need to be?
Yeah.
And she's like, she seems like a master con artist. Shallan thought, sweating. I can't fool someone like this, except that she already had, accidentally.
Right.
Shallan says, how did you end up here, leading guards on a caravan? Is that part of the con? This? No. It wouldn't be worth the trouble. I may have exaggerated my experience in talking to the caravan leaders, but I needed to go to the Shattered Plains and didn't have the resources to do it on my own, at least not safely. So how does a woman like you end up without resources, though? I'd think you would never be without.
Yeah.
Tin says, I'm not. As you can plainly see, you're going to have to get used to rebuilding. If you want to join the profession, it comes, it goes. I got stuck down south without my spheres and am finding my way to more civilized countries. To the Shattered Plains, Shallan said. You have a job there? Of some sort? A con you're intending to pull? Tin smiles. This isn't about me, kid. It's about you and what I
deflection.
Can do for you.
Very good deflection here.
I know people in the war camps. It's practically the new capital of Alvkar. I love that so much when I read that for the first time.
Because we've been talking about it, right?
Because we've been talking about it, but it's never been referred to as the new capital.
Right.
Right? So I like the fact that she's recognizing it as such. Mm-hmm. That's a really interesting thing.
Yeah.
It's practically the new capital of Alvkar. Everything interesting in the country is happening there. Money is flowing like rivers after a storm, but everyone considers it a frontier, and so laws are lax.
Mm-hmm.
So a woman can get ahead if she knows the right people.
Right.
So that's cool that it's like a frontier. A woman can get ahead in the Shattered Plains.
Right, right.
That's interesting. But if she doesn't, she can make enemies really quickly.
Yeah.
Trust me, you want to know who I know, and you want to work with them. Without their approval, nothing big happens at the Shattered Plains. So I ask you again, what are you hoping to accomplish there? I know something about Dalinar Colan. Oh, old Blackthorn himself, Tin says, surprised. He's been living a boring life lately, all superior, like he's some hero from the legends. Yes, well, what I know is going to be very important to him. Very. Well, what is this secret? Shallan didn't answer.
Mm-hmm. Very
not
smart.
Not willing to divulge the goods yet, eh? Tin says. Well, that's understandable. Blackmail is a tricky one. You'll be glad you brought me on. You are bringing me on, aren't you? Yes. I do believe I could learn some things from you.
So a couple things here near the end.
Isn't that great?
It's really cool.
It's so good.
It's really great.
It's so good.
Tin is
it.
Implying which we should have known all along, but that there is some kind of seedy underbelly criminal organization in the Shattered Plains at the war camps, right? You know, you want to know who I know. Without their approval, nothing big happens at the Shattered Plains, right?
Right.
So there's this like every city, there's going to be some criminal organizations, right? And it's really
cool
that...
It's funny you say city, because this is supposed to be war camps.
Right.
But even you just made a slip in
it's,
every city.
It is a city now, right?
But see, that's the trick. Right. It's become a thing. It's, like I love so much how they've slowly established that the war, like the 6 years of fighting, has led to this becoming a permanent place. You know, like they're resurrecting, you know, statues now. They're making the tents are larger. The buildings are becoming more formidable, and like they're not going anywhere.
Right.
Right? Right. It's just we're here to stay.
Right. A wagon can be a carriage, a table can be a desk, and a war camp can be a city.
Can be a city.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Isn't
so
that cool?
It's really neat. I love it. So what's your highlight?
I think that you know, it's the perspective on things. Mm-hmm. Like I really liked Shallan's play at the end. I thought that was really good.
It's really smart of her. She does, like, I have that in my highlights here, too. I wrote that I love how this thing with Tin makes things a little more complicated for Shallan, but she doesn't really miss a beat mm-hmm. at all. She's, like, on top of it and, like, just rolls with the punches and able to recover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tin. I mean, it's a great chapter. New Window. I might have selected that one as nice. The alternate title, as mm-hmm. I mentioned. But no, I'll list that. Her Shallan's just, you know, on the quick,
mm-hmm.
on the quick. I can, you know.
Yeah, she's on it.
Who do I need to be for her? She's slowly almost. What was she's becoming, you know, a person of many faces.
Right.
Like really, really going into the rogue.
Yeah, I was just gonna say she's become a rogue
because we already know that she was a thief to start. Right. Then we find out about earlier talents of art.
Right.
So she's an artist. Well, why not a con artist?
Right. Yeah, it's pretty cool, eh? It's pretty cool.
It's cool. It's really cool. I just that's it for me. Like,
I would
it was
be
great chapter.
I would be remiss to not highlight the idea that when Shallan first met up with Tavlakov. She wanted that wagon as her carriage, and now physically Gaz is turning that wagon into an actual carriage with a window.
Into a carriage.
So she like, you know, put her will out there and made this happen. Yeah. You know, I mean, clearly she didn't order Gaz to do it, but it's just, it's nice that this imagery of the wagon as the carriage has now come to fruition because now it's being, the floor is being sanded and one of the walls of the bars is now into a nice window for her. It's just really cool.
It's kind of like after referring it to as your carriage, it starts to materialize as such,
right.
doesn't it?
It totally does. It really does.
It's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
All right. So chapter 25, Monsters.
Monsters.
Yeah.
Smoke form for hiding and slipping between men. A form of power like human surges.
Mm-hmm.
Bring it round again. Though crafted of gods, it was by unmade hand. Leaves its force to be but one of foe or friend. I was particularly interested in like human surges.
Hmm. Yeah, there's a lot to. I mean, there's the human surges, which is a standout
smoke form.
Mm-hmm. It's a listener song of histories, which is a new song that we haven't read through about before.
Right.
The thing that I want to point out the most, though, is the unmade word here.
Right.
Capital U. We've talked about the unmade before, or not about the unmade, but about this term. Unmade.
Right.
And
unmade. Yeah.
It's referencing something that we don't know yet.
Right.
But it's come up in these epigraphs a couple of times. It was brought up with Yelignar, this thing that tore through Nohadan's scribe and library, killed all the scribes.
Yeah.
So something. Unmade is something.
The unmade must be that which it's like, you know, the way they describe the powers that be, begotten, not made. Right.
Yep. So
that
yeah,
which
it's
is, that which is
right. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see if we learn more about this term.
Yeah, that's I'm looking forward to it. Well, monsters, and of course, I just love now that I've read it and I look back, and now I see the title of it again, and I'm like, monsters.
It's about the horses.
And we're talking about My Little Pony.
Yeah,
My Little Pony.
Yeah,
absolute monsters.
Yeah.
What are Kaladin's
riding? Kaladin's riding cutie pie or whatever.
Yeah. Like, oh my gosh, it's so funny. So Kaladin's here.
Yeah.
He'd been a slave and a surgeon, served on a battlefield and in a light eyes dining room. He'd seen a lot for his 20 years, and here he is, about to take on yet another role, another adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless, he had not expected this day to present him with something so utterly and disconcertingly unfamiliar.
Yeah.
Sir, he asks, taking a step backward, you want me to do what? Dalinar Colan is there and says, get on that horse. I think it's so funny now that I'm doing this with you, because that must have made Kaladin feel so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Get on that horse.
Yeah.
You want me to get on that horse? Like,
and the setup of it, monsters.
I don't want to get on that thing.
And like, he's like, you know, he'd rather be without something so unfamiliar. And it's literally just a horse. For us, it's very familiar. We know what horses are.
Right.
And it's just,
right.
The setup here is like, you want me to do what? Get on a horse.
What? Get on.
It's very simple, dude. you know what I mean?
And he's showing all this hesitation, and then Dalinar kind of calls him out and says, "Soldier, you need to know how to ride.
Yeah.
The time might come when you need to guard my sons on the battlefield. Besides, how long did it take you to reach the palace the other night?
Right. This is a really good point.
To hear about the king's accident." He's like, "Well, it took me almost 3/4 of an hour."
Right.
Dalinar's like, "Well, I have stables near the barracks. You could have made that trip in a fraction of the time if you could ride. Perhaps you won't spend much of your time in the saddle, but this is going to be an important skill for you and your men to know." So Bridge 4 is getting involved here.
Yeah.
And the I like how there's like shrugs all around. So Kaladin's like looking at them and they're like, "I guess so."
Yeah. And but
raising up their
except for
shoulders.
Moash. Moash is the only one who's really eager to learn. This guy's like a sponge. He just wants to learn everything. You know what I mean?
He is. I'm hoping that I don't come to regret my love for Moash, but we'll see, because he's so good at it all, and he picks it up,
right?
All of it picks up.
Mm-hmm.
So, I suppose Kaladin says, "If you think it's important, sir, we'll give it a try." "Good man. I'll send over Jeanette, the stable master." Oh, how I love Jeanette!
Yeah.
So Tin, very cool character. This character, also. Equally cool.
Yeah,
she
very, very
amazing.
Bitchy about her horses. Ain't nobody.
Oh, dude, I love it. She's so protective, yeah. And she's got the like what taut face as opposed to more rounded light eyes. Yeah. Sort of, you know.
You know
like,
what
I like that she's.
I have a feeling that Jeanette was like the weird horse girl in high school who turned out to be really hot in her 20s. You know what I mean? Like everyone made fun of her because she had horse riding lessons, and then grows up, and you're like, "Whoa, that's a smoking hot chick right there."
Horse folk are good-looking folk.
They are.
They must be. Good man. We'll await him with eagerness. We'll await him with eagerness, sir. Kaladin says. Interesting though. Here we can draw a line here. There's a low stone wall that encloses the horses where they are. Okay, the horses could completely jump over it any time.
Yeah.
But they don't.
They don't.
Just like the parchment.
And just like the chulls.
Just like the chulls.
They could leave if they want to, but they don't.
But they don't.
Yeah.
The brutes are wandering around. Again, he's using the term brutes. Like, this is Kaladin. These are Kaladin's thoughts.
Yeah.
The brutes wandered about stalking grass. And this is interesting because the grass is pulling into the ground. And they're licking the stones and the areas around because
this is awesome.
Dude, it simulates rain.
Right. So the grass pokes itself out because it thinks it's raining.
Pokes itself out. Yeah. And so Kaladin doesn't understand this. Hang on. I think this happens a bit later.
Yeah, it does happen a bit later, yeah.
He says here, proper beasts of burden like chulls were slow and docile. He would ride a chull.
Yeah.
But a creature like this? Who knew what they were thinking?
Yeah, because he thinks...
Like, I don't know what you're thinking, this crazy horse.
Yeah, because he says there's something too smart about the horses.
Right.
They're just too smart.
Too smart. Moash steps up beside him and says, "You like him, don't you?" Referring to Kaladin.
Referring to Dalinar.
To Dalinar.
Yeah.
And he says, "Well, he's a good commander." Adolin and Renarin are also close by. They're riding their horses.
Yeah.
And Moash reminds Kaladin of something very important. He says, "Don't get too close to him, Cal. And don't trust him too far. He's a light eyes, remember." "I'm not likely to forget," Kaladin says.
Yeah.
"Besides, you're the one who looked like you'd faint from joy the moment he offered to let us ride these monsters. Have you ever faced a light eyes riding one of these things?" Moash asks. "On the battlefield, I mean." Kaladin remembered thundering hooves, a man in silvery armor, and dead friends.
Yeah.
"Yes," he answers. "Then you know the advantage it offers. I'll take Dalinar's offer gladly." Stable master turned out to be a she, a pretty young light-eyed woman walking up in traditional Vorin gown.
Right.
But it was made of something coarser than silk and was open in the front and the back. She had dark hair and a tail, no ornaments. And she says, "The High Prince says that I'm to let you ruffians touch my horses. I'm not pleased about it." "Well, fortunately, neither are we," says Kaladin.
Yeah.
I love that exchange. That was a good little opener. She looks him up and down. And she says, "You're that one, aren't you? The one everyone's talking about." "Maybe." "You need a haircut." "All right, listen up." She starts talking. I like how she just says one thing to him and then goes on to address everyone else.
"Yeah.
You need a haircut." "All right, everybody, listen up, boys. We're going to do this. If we're going to do this properly." Like, I chuckled out loud.
It's hilarious.
"I won't have you hurting my horses, all right? You listen and you listen well." What preceded was one of I burst out laughing at this too, dude. The way this is worded, what preceded was one of the dullest, most protracted lectures of Kaladin's life.
Yeah.
The woman went on and on about posture, straight back, but not too tense, about getting the horses to move. Dude, I'm just laughing.
Yeah.
Uproariously.
And then later, the men have literally checked out completely of what she just said because they do everything wrong later, right?
Well, she says all this and she's not even allowed to touch them.
Right. Yeah.
Like, you can't even touch them. Like, so she just spews all this stuff out, which is hilarious.
Yeah, it's funny.
About getting the horses to move, nudges the heels, nothing too sharp, but how to ride, how to respect the animal, how to hold the reins properly.
How to balance.
And all this before being allowed to even touch one of the creatures.
Yeah, it's funny.
So Adolin Colin this is funny. Adolin Colin is there and comes
He rides over,
And it says here in the description, riding that white monster of a horse of his.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I just love it. I just think it's so funny. Adolin looked over the bridgeman with a smirk and then looks at Jeanette a little less condescendingly and says, "Jeanette, looking fetching today, as always. Is that a new dress?" She bends down, picks up a stone, and throws it at him, which I'm sure was endearing to Kaladin. And he's like, "Oh, come on now. You're not still sore about that." And then there's another rock. Right then. So Adolin's turning to get out of there. So
He's got to he must have dated her for a couple of days or something.
She probably didn't like being brought into, assassination investigations on first dates.
So I think that's exactly it.
I'm out of here.
I think she's one of, because in the first book they talk about all these women that he dated, and we only know a certain amount of them because for a certain amount of time in his POVs, we got to see the girls he dated. But we know there were some before that too, and Jeanette was probably one of those girls.
Probably one of them. So he actually buggers off, and Kaladin's there with her and says, "Lots of women on your staff, eh?" Noticing the grooms and stuff. "Horseback riding isn't mentioned in Arts and Majesty," she replied. "Horses weren't terribly well known back then.
Yeah.
Radiance had Raishadium, but even kings had little access to ordinary horses. Which matters because..." Kaladin's like... And she frowning, she looks at him baffled. "Arts and Majesty," she prompts. "Foundation of masculine and feminine arts? Of course, I keep looking at those captain's knots on your shoulder, but I'm just an ignorant dark eyes." So I want to pause here for a second because initially when I read this, when she's like Arts and Majesty, I almost felt that she was like almost referencing like, you don't know
this famous book called Arts and Majesty?
Arts and Majesty, and about how they refer to the horses and all this sort of stuff. And I immediately just thought of a magazine publication in Notting Hill with Hugh Grant, and where he says, "I'm from Horse and Hound. Don't you know Horse and Hound?" Like this this publication about that's important regarding horses and the history of,
That's funny.
So I was just imagining all these like horse magazines on like a rack, and I'm like, who buys those? Yeah. Of course, people a lot of buy
people,
them.
Yeah, like, people like it. Yeah, yeah.
So I was bringing in Notting Hill for some reason. That's into so my reading when I was
any
reading this
any time book. To bring in Hugh Grant, right?
Yeah, that's it. So, he says, but I'm just in an ignorant dark eyes. Sure, if that's how you want to put it. Whatever. Look, I'm not going to give you a lecture on the arts. I'm tired of talking to people already. Let's just say that anyone who wants can be a groom, all right?
Yeah.
She lacked a polished refinement that Kaladin found refreshing.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I like that. The grooms walked the horses out of their enclosure to a riding ground, which was shaped like a ring. Kaladin selects the beast that didn't look too evil.
Yeah, like, I like that. Yeah.
The language here. Brandon, Mr. Sanders, you're just killing it. This is awesome. the group selected a beast that didn't look too evil.
Yeah.
Nearby, Moash finished and threw up his saddle. So he's already eager and on his way.
Yeah, he's already gone.
Moash says, stop. Yeah, whoa, how do I get it to stop?
Yeah, it's because Moash's horse just starts wandering off.
And she's like, you dropped the reins. Storming fool, weren't you listening?
That's what I was saying earlier when she did her little lecture on what to do. Literally no one listened.
And then
they all got on their horses and like, what's going on? We don't know what's happening.
Yep. Moash is like, can't I just slap it over the head with a reed like you do a chull? And she's rubbing her forehead.
Yeah.
Look, he says, Kaladin says, you don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. Let's just be pleasant to one another and get it over with as quickly as possible.
I like how he's so negotiating. He's to the horse.
Yeah, he's saying to Spray, which is his horse.
Yeah.
And the horse snorts. Kaladin takes a deep breath and grabs the saddle and throws himself up into it. He almost was thrown, but then he manages to hang on.
Right.
And he says, Kaladin's like, hey now, come on, let's move. And the horse ignores him.
Yeah, he tries to like kick his heels into the horse.
Yeah,
and it won't move. And he says, "You're supposed to be like, some kind of wagon with legs. You're worth more than a village. Prove it.
Yeah, prove it. Yeah, get going onward." And the horse is licking the rocks.
This is what we were talking about. Yeah, this is
what
really
we were talking
cool.
earlier. And he's like, "What? What is the thing doing?" I had to pause there. The thing.
Right.
What is the thing?
Yeah, like a monster.
Like.
Yeah.
Dude, it's hilarious.
Yeah, it's really like, good really good so use of funny. Language and yeah.
I just love it. Poking out so the horse is going for the grass, it's a licking fools the grass into thinking rain has come.
Yeah.
And that was my alternate title for this chapter. Rain has come.
I like it when he says clever beast, lazy but clever.
But clever, yeah. Lazy, but clever. You need to show her you're in charge, Jeanette says. Tighten the reins, sit up straight, pull your head up, and don't let her eat. She'll walk all over you if you're not firm. Kaladin tries to obey.
Yeah. And he ends up getting it to move, though.
Walking.
Yeah, he gets her moving, walking.
Yeah. And he says steering wasn't that difficult. It felt strange to have some other thing in control of where he was going. He just kept feeling that like the horse could just take off,
right?
And that made him very nervous
for sure. Like, and I think that's what like that. Most people who have ever never been on a horse think too. The horse is just gonna fucking take off on me, right? And it's an actual fear. I think.
You know what's funny? Mm. I'm just thinking right now that when I went horseback riding, I never let that into my head.
Really?
I never thought that.
Oh, I did, and then it happened.
But now that I think about it,
it's a bit more
unnerving. Oh my God, that's funny. So
I do like here he says, that half of Jeanette's training had been about not spooking the horse and then never surprising one from behind.
Yeah.
I think that's
so
awesome.
He pulls up beside Natam on purpose.
Yeah.
And this long-faced bridgeman was hanging onto the reins as if they were precious gemstones, afraid to yank them from the horse.
Yeah.
I just love the fact that it's described as such, that he's holding onto precious gemstones.
Yeah, he's like so focused.
And he's like, I can't believe people ride these things on storm and purpose, Natam says. I mean, we ain't moving any faster than walking, right? and Kaladin's like, he's remembering the image of the charging mount and the shard bearer from long ago. He says, yes, Kaladin could see the reason for horses. Sitting up higher made it easier to strike with power, and the size of the horse its bulk and momentum, frightened soldiers on foot, and sent them scattering. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, horses have a distinct advantage on the battlefield, for sure. I think most go faster than these, Kaladin says. I bet they gave us the old horses to practice on. Yeah, I suppose, Natam says. It's warm. Didn't expect that. I've ridden shawls before, but this thing shouldn't be so warm. Hard to feel like this thing is worth as much as it is. It's like I'm riding about on a pile of emerald bromes. Only emerald's backsides ain't nearly so busy.
So then Kalatir switches the conversation to something a little more important here. And
I want to say that here we get the reason why he pulled up beside Natam.
Right. And
it
here's
wasn't just random, like, you know, whatever.
And I think this is the whole reason for this chapter. Like, we don't necessarily need to know that they're learning how to ride horses. This conversation with Natam is the thing that's the important thing, right?
Right.
Because it sparks a revelation later, right? So he's like,
totally.
It's like, do you remember how much of the day when someone tried to kill the king? And Atam's like, oh, sure. I was with the guys who ran out there, found him flapping in the wind like the Stormfather's own ears.
Yeah.
And then Cal thinks, you know, this guy would barely say two sentences, but when they first started, and now, like, he's able to talk and everything. He's like, the last few weeks have been good for everybody. You know, it's been a really good progress for these men to, like, come out of their shells. Like, we've talked about coming out of your shell and all that stuff. So, then he asks them, before the storm that night, was anyone out there on the balcony? Any servants? Any soldiers who weren't with the King's Guard?
Right.
And then Natam pretty much says, no, there were no servants, as I recall. I guarded the king all night with the King's Guard. Mm-hmm. Ain't nothing standing out to me. And then the horse starts to take off on him, and he's like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Right.
And then Cal calls up to him. He's like, okay, well, think about it. See if you can remember anything.
See if you can remember, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe the horse will jog his memory.
Yeah. Maybe it'll gallop his memory.
Yeah. A small horse galloped past him in the air made of light.
Yeah.
And Syl giggles.
Yeah. She's turned Syl herself into a horse.
Yeah. And she comes and she's like, you're not enjoying yourself. You're starting to sound a lot like my mother.
This is so funny.
Amazing. Witty. Meaningful. Repetitive. Captivating, amazing, witty, meaningful, very funny.
Says the man who's not laughing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, says the man who's not laughing. All right, so what is drearifying you today? Drearifying? Is that a word? You don't know. He shook his head. Yes? Yes, it absolutely is. Something's off, he said, about the conversation I just had with Natam. What did you talk about? The assassination attempt. And if he'd seen anyone before the storm.
Mm-hmm.
He looks down and meets Syl's eyes. The storm itself would have blown down the railing, Kaladin said. Bending it, Syl said, standing up. Ooh.
Right.
It was cut clean, though, from the mortar on the bottom chipped away. I'll bet the force of the winds was easily equal to the weight of the king, to the weight that the king put on it. So that's a very good point.
Yeah. He comes to a realization here. He's like, wait a minute. The storm, if it was cut before the storm,
right,
the power of those winds would have bent the metal.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So that means, then he says, so the sabotage must have happened. Yeah. After the storms, which is great to know, right? It's a little clue.
A smaller window.
Right. For sure.
A new window. There you go.
Oh, it's a window. A window got put into this investigation.
Yeah. There you go. Having trouble, bridge boy? Oh, I hated this line. That's why I texted it to you. I was like, oh, God.
Yeah.
This is Adeline coming over. Having trouble, bridge boy?
Yeah.
And he's trotting up beside him. Kaladin tries to kick his horse faster, but she just kept clopping along at one speed.
Mm-hmm.
I did have a absolute, you know, jackism, you know, akin to my silly Amaram theories and all my other theories. As I was reading this, okay, so I'll bring it up in just a second. So Spray, which is Kaladin's horse. Spray might have been fast in her youth, Adeline says, but that was 15 years ago. I'm surprised she's still around, honestly. But she seems perfectly suited for training children and bridgemen.
Yeah, a little bit of a dig
so
there.
So what I thought as I kept reading this is I thought, okay, here we go. This is going to be a display from Kaladin to show that he's going to overcome the horse, and what I thought he was going to do was draw in Stormlight and then put it into the horse.
And bring
the horse, well, make the, like, so it sounds here that Spray might be an older horse, a little slower.
Oh, I see. Give the horse some strength and like.
Right. And like speed and like, oh my gosh. And all of a sudden there'd be this display. Like, right. I thought that's what we were going to see this, but that's not what we're going to
see. No, that's not what I ended up going on. But no. I can see why you would think that for sure.
But that's, I just don't think, but that's what I thought.
To be honest, I don't think that Stormlight can be transferred that way.
Right. See, I don't know that.
Right. Well, I think that you do because it hasn't happened yet. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well,
as of right now in the story,
right,
the Stormlight can't be transferred that way. We don't know if it can in the future, but as of right now, we know it can't be yet. He can transfer it to objects and stick it to places and do that, but it can't be. He hasn't tried to share it with anybody, right?
Right. So I don't really know. Right. I just thought that maybe we might have got a display like that.
Right, right.
And even it kind of leaded me along here in my silly theories as I was reading it.
So Adeline goads Cal into going onto this like more robust
more
and
spunk?
Fast. Yeah, more fast horse. This is so funny, dude.
Dreamstorm over there might be more to your liking.
Right.
Dreamstorm, Callum thinks.
He turns his horse into that direction, and then he gets off. And he's like, you know, he's like, I'm going to fucking do it.
Yeah. And Syl's like, weren't you just complaining that you'd rather walk than let a horse carry you about?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are you doing thinking about riding that, referring to Dreamstorm?
Mm-hmm.
This horse, he says, is only for walking. I can walk just fine on my own, but that other one, that's an animal for war.
Right.
The same argument Zael made to me about learning to fight against a shard blade.
Right, because he thinks to himself, horses were an advantage on the battlefield, and so Kaladin should be at least familiar. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's
so,
thinking, you know what, I regret that.
Right, and it's very possible that this moment will lead to him going to Zael and being like, hey, you know what, I might have been wrong about the whole... Don't teach me thing.
What do you think you're doing, Jeanette says, riding up. I'm going to get on that, Kaladin says. She'll throw you in a heartbeat and you'll break your crown, Bridgman. She's not good with riders. Well, she has a saddle on. Yeah, but so that she can get used to wearing one. I don't like that look in your eyes, Jeanette told him, turning her own animal to the side. And Kaladin just says to her, I'm going to give it a try. You won't even be able to get on, Jeanette says. Syl alights on Kaladin's shoulder. This is going to be like back in the light-eyed practice grounds, isn't it? Kaladin asks. I'm going to end up on my back, staring up at the sky, feeling like a fool. Probably, Syl said. So why are you doing this? Because of Adeline? Nah, the princeling can storm away. Well, then why? Because I'm scared of these things.
Yeah, that's the reason why.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, it's so cool.
It's so good. I've got to overcome my fear.
I love this here. Adeline's like looks over and he's like, oh, he's like, Storms, Bridge Boy, don't actually do it. Are you mad?
Yeah, are you mad?
Like,
yeah,
I was just joshing with you, bro.
Don't actually do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like
it
too.
Yeah.
Like, he almost like regrets saying that to Kaladin, right?
Right.
I love the way this works out. It is so funny, dude. He puts himself up there. Yeah.
Yeah.
He uses Stormlight to jump up on it. And then lash him. And then he lashes himself to the saddle.
To it. Yeah.
So that he can, like, because it starts to buck and try to get him off of it. But because he's stuck to it, he doesn't get bucked off. He just gets whipped around. He's getting major whiplash. It is so funny, dude. The beast was incredibly strong and distinct and powerful to contrast Spray. Kaladin was quite nearly hurled from the seat on the first buck, right?
Yeah.
So strong. Such a strong horse.
He says here, the Voidbringer beast moved like a storm itself.
Yeah.
I like how all of the references to the horse keep building in their intensity of what's evil or threatening.
Right, right.
So you refer to him as a monster, as a beast, as an evil thing.
And
to
now it's a
Voidbringer. Now being referred to as a Voidbringer.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? It's just like, it just keeps getting worse.
It's so funny. And then it says, after what seemed like an eternity, the horse blowing out a big frothy breath stilled. So the horse finally like relaxed, right? and the horse snorts, right? And then Kaladin's vision cleared, and then a bunch of the bridgemen are cheering him on, and then in one powerful motion, the horse bucks him off, because his Stormlight ran out. His lashing that he did runs out, and he gets bucked right the fuck off the horse. Oh my god, it's so funny.
Adeline and Jeanette, it says here, both mounted, were looking at that. This whole mixture
of horror and awe.
Horror and awe.
Yeah.
They're on their faces at what seemed to be a mixture of horror and awe.
That's so funny, dude.
That's just so funny.
Yeah, it says here he didn't realize the Stormlight had run out.
Kaladin finds himself dazed, lying on his back, staring at the sky.
Yeah.
A number of Painspren are wiggling out on the ground beside him. Painspren with little orange hands grabbing this way and that.
Yeah.
And then Kaladin says, "You monster, you waited until I was relaxed, then you threw me." The horse snorted again, and Kaladin found himself laughing.
Okay, so this is a really awesome part here because...
But that felt good, he says.
Yeah.
He couldn't explain why, but the act of clinging for dear life to the thrashing animal had truly been exhilarating.
Kaladin actually laughs out loud here, right?
Yeah.
He's like, the horse bucked me at the right moment. It's really smart. He called it smart earlier. You know, a very clever girl, right?
Yeah.
Like in Jurassic Park, clever girl. But he actually laughs out loud here. Like, you know, Syl was being funny earlier and he didn't laugh at that. But this interaction with this horse, this thing that he's afraid of, makes him actually laugh out loud. And he's exhilarated by it. Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah. It's really neat. So Dalinar actually breaks through the crowd. He's there and sees this.
He forgot. Cal and forgot he was there.
Yeah, Cal's like, "You don't chase down assassins on a placid mount, sir." Kaladin says, "Yes, but it is customary to start training men by using weapons without edges, soldier. You all right?" "I'm fine, sir."
"Yeah.
Well, it seems your men are taking to the training. I'm going to put in a requisition release. You and five others, you selector to come here and practice every day for the next 2 weeks, or for the next few weeks." "Yes, sir," he says. "Good," Dalinar says. "I received your proposal for an initial patrols outside of the war camps and thought it looked good. Why don't you start in 2 weeks and bring some horses with you to practice out in the field?" Outside the city limits, and Jeanette's like, "But what about bandits?"
"What?"
Dalinar's like, "The horses are here to be used, Jeanette. Captain, you'll be sure to bring enough troops to protect the horses, won't you?"
"Yeah."
"Yes, sir," Kaladin says. "Good, but do leave that one behind," Dalinar says.
Pointing at the crazy horse.
Referring to Dreamstorm.
Yeah.
"But I want to see more Dreamstorm. Oh, my God."
Yeah.
Bridge four moved to their horses as Jeanette calls out for them to remount and start a second phase of training. Kaladin found himself standing near Adeline, who remained mounted. "Thanks," Adeline says. "For what?" says Kaladin. "Not telling Father that I put you up to that." "I'm not an idiot, Adeline. I could see what I was getting myself into."
An all right That's interaction between the two of them here.
Yeah.
You know?
I know. I liked it better than many of the previous ones, especially when Adeline's like, no, I didn't actually, no.
Yeah, don't do it.
I didn't actually say to do it. What are you doing? Don't get on it. What are you, crazy?
If he was a true asshole, he would have just not said anything,
like,
right?
He would have been
check
like this, hey,
out.
Watch this.
Yeah.
Watch
hey,
this.
Renarin, check this out. And then Renarin would have been like, "Don't get on it. You're crazy."
You just couldn't resist. You had to slip in a Renarin voice.
I haven't done it in a few episodes.
Don't. Now you got me wanting to do
Don't
it.
Don't get on that
Don't
horse.
Don't get on it.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
So he moves over to talk to Nadim again.
Right. Nadim was watching and says, "That's unfair, sir. What I did with Dreamstorm? No, the way you just ride like that seems so natural for you." "It didn't feel that way." I want to talk more about that night, sir. I haven't thought of anything yet, but been a little distracted."
"Yeah.
I have another question for you," Kaladin says. "I asked about your shift during the day, but what about right after I left? Did anyone other than the king go out on the balcony?" "Just the guards. Well, tell me which ones. Maybe they saw something." "I mainly watched the door. The king remained in the sitting room for a time. I guess Moash went out." "Moash," Kaladin says. "Wasn't his shift supposed to be done soon?" Yeah, but he stayed around a little extra time. He wanted to see the king settled. While waiting, Moash went out to watch the balcony. You usually want one of us to be out there. Thanks, Kaladin says. I'll ask him.
Mm-hmm.
So this is interesting. And then it says that Moash took to the riding and seemed to pick up everything quickly.
Yeah.
But Kaladin was watching for a few minutes, frowning, and then it struck him. What are you thinking? That Moash might have had something to do with the assassination attempt? Don't be stupid. That's ridiculous. Besides, the man didn't have a shard blade.
Right. Cal might be getting a little bit paranoid here, right? He's like trying to figure this out. He's trying to figure out the scratches on the wall, the assassination attempt. He feels very, very protective over the people he's trying to protect. And he's like, what are you thinking? He's getting a little bit paranoid, I think, here.
Kaladin turns his horse away. And as he did, he saw the person that Dalinar had gone to meet. Bright Lord Amaram. The two were too far away for Kaladin to hear what they were saying, but he could see the amusement on Dalinar's face.
Mm-hmm.
You know that? Like when you're looking across and you might see someone chatting, oh, they're having a good time. And you're like, oh, God.
Fuckers.
Adolin and Renarin rode up beside them, smiling broadly. The anger that surged within Kaladin, sudden, passionate, almost chokingly strong, made him clench his fists. His breath hissed out. That surprised him. He'd thought the hatred buried deeper than that. He'd turned his horse pointedly the other direction, suddenly looking forward to the chance to go on patrol with the new recruits.
Mm-hmm.
Getting away from the war camp sounded very good to him.
Yeah.
Like he's almost out of control.
Yeah,
with his expression.
Can't. Yeah, well, I mean, he's every time he sees Amaram, and every time he sees the Kolins with Amaram, it makes it worse and worse, right? Like this, you know, how can they, and Cal's already mentioned this to Dalinar, right? So it's not like he's not told him yet. So it makes it even worse now.
You know what I love the most about the ending of this chapter?
Mm.
Is it comes full circle with the title, Monsters.
Right.
And what you have at the end, or we're discussing Amaram, who we know to be a monster.
For sure.
But also in the description of Kaladin, clenched fists, his breath hissed out.
Hissed out,
like a beast, like a monster.
Yeah.
Like a void bringer.
Right.
Like, this is crazy. This is really cool.
Like, worryingly that Cal is becoming a monster?
Yeah, well, like I've been saying to you, like I think he's coming, like more unglued.
It tracks a little bit because he's you know, for a second considering that his best friend could be behind stuff, and then his hatred for Amaram is like making him like lose control. So yeah, you're right. Cal's not in a good place right now.
I'm gonna say it. I think there could be a dash of Anakin in this character.
Oh, okay, a little bit of a dark side.
Well, and not that he'll go to it, just that, like, it's about potential.
Right.
It's about potential. Mm-hmm. Like, will he?
Right.
You know, I don't know.
What's your highlight for this chapter?
Highlight of Monster? Oh, my gosh. For me, it's all about Kaladin's descriptions in his head when dealing with the horses.
Yeah, referring to them as monsters and evil. Yeah.
Monsters, beasts,
the thing. Yeah.
Like all of those references. Yeah, though that's my highlight for sure.
Yeah, that's great. That's awesome.
I just love it. And I also like that the reading into the monster thing at the end, that description of him hissing.
Yeah.
Like you don't describe that.
No.
Unless you're wanting to convey that maybe there's the potentiality for
monster himself. It's nice to point out for sure. It's awesome.
Yeah.
My highlight is, I just really love that little moment where Cal relax, Stormlight's gone, the horse bucks him off, snorts, as in like a victory snort.
Yeah.
And then he says, did that on purpose. You waited till I relaxed. And the horse snorted again. And then Cal can't help but laugh. I like it. I like this like little kind of honest moment between Cal and this thing that he hates, this thing that he thinks is a monster. It actually makes him laugh, and I really like that. You know, seeing Cal laugh out loud
is really cool.
It's really important, right?
That's really it's good.
Because Sills told him, you know, maybe you should start forcing yourself to laugh, because if you force yourself to laugh, maybe you'll actually laugh and it's good for you. So this I think was a good interaction for Kaladin. Yeah, I think it's really good.
Well, I think it might speak to something. I mean, I think there could be more to these characters in terms of, like, you know, maybe living multiple experiences, or, you know, like, I don't know. It feels like you're reading about one character, but really you might be including like past experiences or maybe future experiences. Like it seems like Kaladin has done this before.
Right.
There's
a cyclical nature to all this, right?
Yeah, somewhat. Mm-hmm. It kind of seems like these characters are old or not what they are.
Right.
It's weird. Yeah. I can't explain it. It just seems sort of that way. That's all.
You know what? Cool. I can't explain. I can explain stuff in an info dump.
Info. Well, what could we have for an info dump today?
Info dump. 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 Info dump. Dump.
Info dump.
Info dump. Dump. Dump.
You just want to be able to say dump.
Info dump. So for the info dump today, we have...
That was great, though. I like that number.
Yeah, thanks. We have forehead tattoos on slaves. We talked a little bit about it before. Are used for willing servants, which is great because people sometimes, you know, have, you know, if they're living on the street, they want to be able to get a meal and a place to sleep. They will, you know... put themselves into slavery, into servitude, and that forehead thing is tattooed on there, as opposed to when it's branded. Those people were forced into servitude, whether because they were they did something wrong, or you could actually be a slave whom your parents were slaves and they never paid off that debt, and so you're born into slavery by that too.
Right.
So that's a horrible horrible life. You know, you did nothing wrong. Your parents were slaves, and now you're born into slavery. Must be horrible. Mm-hmm. The other thing in the info dump I have here is span read and information houses. We talked a little bit about, which is really, really awesome concept. You have a span read, you write it to another span read. That person has maybe 10 span reads in front of them, and you're relaying a message. You're like, oh, I'd like Carbranth to hear about this bit of information. So you write it into your span read to that Tashik span read, and then that person writes that same information into the Carbranth span read, and that information goes to Carbranth.
Gets passed
along. Or maybe you're like, oh, I need someone to investigate anything that they can about House Devar. So then that person in Tashik will actually hire someone either in Vaidnar, in Yakaved, or in another city that can do something. So it's like a kind of an interconnected span read web going on, which is really fucking awesome.
It's cool.
Yeah, it's really useful. Last thing is the Arts and Majesty book, which is the book that in the Alethi culture declares... you know, what men and women can do. You know, it's a Vorin thing, not an Alethi thing, because Shallan is Yakaved and she prescribes by that. So this is the book that we'll talk about. Women eat fruit, sweet stuff. Men eat spice. Women can do this. No curry for you. we're going to Thai, but you can't come. We're going to Thai. We're going out for Thai tonight, but you're not allowed coming. Yeah.
You can't come. Here's a lollipop.
And the reason why horseback riding wasn't mentioned in this book was because horseback riding wasn't really a popular thing when this book was written. We know that most horses, not Rashadium, come from Shinovar, which is a very far off land, kind of separate from everybody else, and that Rashadiums are like kind of wild animals that live out there, and they're very, very rare. So horseback riding wouldn't have been considered in the Arts and Majesty when they published it. Yeah. So that's it for the info dump.
Very, very good.
It is very good. If you want to support the show, you can do so a couple of different ways. You can do so by word of mouth. Tell your friends, tell your grandma, tell your cousins, hey, there's a show we like. We think you should like it too. But first, you have to read all these really large books. And that doesn't sound like it's a really good way of getting things across. But if you if you want to help, you can just spread the word or rate and review where you can. If you want to support the show directly, you you can do so at patreon.com/heroesof. We've got all kinds of little treats on there. Go and take a look. It's super fun. If you want to reach out to us, you can do so at heroesofacathra@gmail.com, on Twitter at heroesof1, or at the Storm Pod on Instagram, which is always the best way to reach us. I guess that's the show, Jack. We are, you know, we're getting mighty close to part two here, to the end of part two.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It's I think we've got 4 episodes left. The next episode.
Ooh.
The next episode will be 3 chapters, because the middle chapter is only like a very, very small. It's like a 2-pager. So we will do 3 chapters in a row. So 26, 27, and 28 for anyone who's reading along with us as well. Yeah, that's it, everybody. That's the show. Thanks a lot for spending almost 2 hours with us. Holy shit, how long is this thing? Yeah, it's almost 2 hours. So thanks a lot for spending some time with us. We love you very much. And until next time.
Take care, everybody.
The Storm Pod is brought to you by Heroes Of. Music and theme song by Jack Forrest Productions. Additional music by Jason Moray. Produced by our wonderful Patreon team and the Heroes of Acathra.